In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Oh yeah, you betcha. Time to talk movies. Alan Adams of The Main Edge joining us over the telephone this afternoon. How are you on this Monday, Al?
Pretty good. Yourself?
Good, thank you. How'd your weekend go?
Good. It was, we had a lovely time at the Bangor Arts Exchange on Saturday. Had a pretty good show. Not a solid turnout considering how much stuff was going on in town and how many million degrees it was outside. So it was, we had a lot of fun.
Good. I was sorry to miss that. We had some COVID concerns in the house, so I was unable to be there. So I missed all you guys, but I know you knocked it out of the park like always.
Yeah, we had fun. People seemed to have a good time, and then enjoyed a few libations downstairs at Black Bear, and just had one heck of a night.
Well, that's awesome. Well, I miss that even more.
Yeah, right. That's the good part. That's
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So I saw a couple of movies, and boy, they're ones that all kinds of people are talking about. Which one would you like to begin with?
We're gonna go long on one of these. So I'm gonna start with The Gray Man, which is the new film streaming on Netflix. It is, by many reports, the most expensive Netflix production in the history of the company, with a budget of $200+ million. It is a star-spangled production from top to bottom, from the directors, the Russo brothers, Joe and Anthony Russo, best known for their work in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but they've done a ton of other big-budget films. Two A-list stars heading the way in Ryan Gosling and Chris Evans. And, it's a big blockbustery sort of action shoot 'em up. It's the kind of movie that you hire the Russo brothers to do. And it should be noted that Joe Russo actually was one of the co-writers on the screenplay, along with Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely. So very much a Russo brothers joint. And when you watch it, it feels very much like a Russo brothers joint. And honestly, like, as far as like people making these sorts of movies right now, there are people who are better at it than the Russos, but you could count them on one hand. Like, these are guys who you really want steering the ship when you're, you know, talking a $200 million+ budget. But the basic gist is, so we first meet this fellow by the name of Court Gentry. That's got Ryan Gosling. He's in a prison visiting room. He has been imprisoned for murder, the circumstances of which we're led to believe are more complicated than you might expect, although we're not given the specifics right away. And he's sitting across from a gentleman by the name of Donald Fitzroy, played by the wonderful Billy Bob Thornton.
Wow.
And Mr. Fitzroy he's a representative of the Central Intelligence Agency, and he is recruiting Court to become part of a super secret program involving assassins and a general hush hush type work called the program is called Sierra. And so he is no longer Court Gentry. He is now Sierra 6. That is the name by which he will be known. Basically, he is to serve as what they call a gray man, which is someone who operates outside the regular purview of governmental and intelligence agencies, doing the stuff that the folks who work by the book can't legally do. We jump forward nearly two decades. It's the present day, and our man Six is in Bangkok on assignment. He's supposed to knock off a guy who apparently is holding some dangerous national security information that he is looking to sell. He's working alongside another CIA agent named Danny Miranda, played by the wonderful Ana de Armas. Mission goes sideways because Six decides that there's too much risk of collateral damage, and which infuriates the guy who's in charge of this particular operation, the lead agent, Danny Carmichael, played by Regine Page, who's best known from his work on Bridgerton. So that all gets complicated when Six comes into possession of information that causes him to question all of the circumstances surrounding all of this. He winds up going rogue, trying to get to the bottom of what's actually happening, which leads to our friend Carmichael bringing in an outside contractor, a mercenary by the name of Lloyd Hansen, Chris Evans in just a spectacular mustache. And he's like, he's a full-on, like, bright-eyed sociopath. You know, he's the kind of guy that you bring in when you don't care what happens to anybody else. You just want the job to get done. And, yeah, and then from there, things get pretty gnarly. Our man Six is crisscrossing the globe, multiple exotic locations in this film. And, you know, you get your firefights, your car chases, hand-to-hand combat. There's kidnappings and enhanced interrogation and all kinds of nastiness just being thrown around. And our guy Six, he doesn't know who he can trust, Rich. There's just a small handful of people that he might be able to trust. And it's basically him against the world, all in service of sort of bringing these sort of brutal truths to light. Like, this is pure action spectacle. Like, this is a movie that, I mean, it just basically, like, it puts the pedal to the floor, like, right from the beginning and just goes. Like, it does not let off the gas. It's got all these incredibly, like, these big set pieces. Like, it's the sort of movie that has, like, half a dozen action sequences that could conceivably be the centerpiece of another movie, but there's like six of them here. But that being said, like, bigger isn't always going to be better. And the truth is that a little nuance would have gone a long way, as far as storytelling is concerned here. You know, it's not helped by the fact that things get a little choppy in terms of the editing. And so sometimes it's difficult to really see fully what's going on in these clearly expensive and very elaborate action sequences, which, you know, in a lot of ways kind of defeats the purpose. And then there's the story, which doesn't really cohere. Like, obviously it's about spectacle, and but the truth is that kind of gets in the way sometimes. Like, it's not even that you don't know what's happening so much as you're never really clear on why things are happening. You know, this leads to narrative holes that never really get closed, and so the plot is a bit more opaque than you'd probably like. And again, like, you don't need, like, you know, intricate plotting in a movie like this, but, like, A to B to C should make some semblance of sense, and this movie doesn't necessarily always do that. All that aside, it has to be noted that the cast is exceptional. Like, everybody is really doing a great job. Like, Gosling is a very solid sort of action lead in a movie like this. Like, he has a really prominent sort of knack for doing a lot with a little in terms of, like, emotional expression and stuff like that. Like, he really does a great job of, you know, of bringing forward these little moments of emotional and empathetic connection, you know, with a role that's largely meant to be played pretty stoically. And, man, like, Chris Evans alone is worth the price of admission for watching this movie, man. Like, he is so obviously having just a blast playing this role. Like, there's always a joy in the sort of it seeing someone, particularly like a clean cut sort of clean cut sort of guy like Chris Evans, like, just really leaning into the sort of leering, grinning kind of sociopath kind of thing. You know, and so it's just like he's this dude with a mustache wearing polo shirts and just generally being a complete lunatic. And it's great. And then, you know, I mentioned, like, Billy Bob Thornton and Ana de Armas, like, they're great. Alfred Woodard is in this, one as well, for a couple of scenes. Claire Butters, who's probably best known for, playing the little girl, opposite, Leonardo DiCaprio in that wonderful scene in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. But she plays a young lady in this one. She has a couple of great scenes. So, yeah, everybody in the cast, like, the performances are all really good. And that makes up for a lot of the ground that is kind of lost by these sort of narrative issues. Doesn't get all the way there, though. And so what you're left with is a movie that kind of feels more like a collection of disparate pieces rather than a single coherent, like, work. And, you know, again, the parts that click, like, really click, like, even as the ones that don't kind of fall flat. So, basically, like, if you're a fan of, like, large-scale blockbuster cinema, like, you'll get plenty of satisfaction from the good bits. You know, and that will more than make it worth the watch. But, again, as I've made a point of saying over the course of my life, size isn't everything. So basically it's a movie that's somewhere between good and bad. It exists in, dare I say it, Rich, a bit of a gray area.
Ah, very nice. That's Alan's take on The Gray Man. All right, let's hear all about the newest from Jordan Peele, Nope.
We've talked about this a number of times on the air. This idea that genre movies have for a long time been sort of utilized as delivery mechanisms for, like, larger, sort of deeper ideas about the world, about society, etc. And again, there are plenty that are just pure entertainment, but for a lot of filmmakers, a lot of really smart filmmakers, those sort of genre trappings, whether you're talking about sci-fi or horror or noir or westerns, like, they provide this sort of outlet to express your insights regarding the world in which we are living. I would argue that no contemporary filmmaker has embraced that ethos as fully as Jordan Peele. He has, displayed on multiple occasions a real gift for tackling those sort of larger ideas through the utilization and exploitation of genre trappings and tropes. And, Nope, his latest, is a, a sci-fi. It's got some sci-fi. It's got some horror. Definitely got some comedy moments. And it's this film that has a lot to say about the relationship that we as consumers have with entertainment. Specifically, this notion of the idea of spectacle, and so you have this really wonderful sort of clever, weird kind of throwback of a film. Like, it's very obviously enamored with the sci-fi offerings and, like, sort of monster movies of, like, the 1950s. Like, it's clearly, he's obviously trying to make his sort of version of a 50s monster movie. But even as it's doing that, he's got his thoughts on entertainment writ large sort of being displayed, whether we're talking about how we operate in the present day or how those feelings have evolved over the years. Again, big things, big ideas, they're great. They don't matter if the delivery system doesn't, deliver. That's what he does, man. Like, he did it with Get Out. He did it with Us, and he's doing it with Nope. Like, it's just this, he packaged these insights into this well-made, entertaining movie. And I will concede, this one's a little bit shaggier than some of his previous offerings, and it's more challenging, I think, to parse in a lot of ways. But I don't know. I don't feel like you can deny the fact that he is just an exceptional craftsman, both as a writer and a director. And that sense of craft is very much on display in Nope. And this is where I should probably issue a little bit of a disclaimer. I'm going to try to offer up some synopsis of this film. My general antipathy towards spoilers. And
right.
This is a movie that is particularly susceptible to that sort of thing. This synopsis may feel a little incomplete to listeners. But just trust me when I say I'm giving you what you need. You'll find out the rest when you see it, and you will be glad that I didn't tell you. So we'll just leave it at that. But the basic gist is, we have a guy, Otis Hayward Jr., played by Daniel Kaluuya. He goes by OJ, which is just one of many, many little nods and winks that Peele gives us towards our relationship with the entertainment world. But he's a horse trainer. He works with his dad, played by Keith David, at the family business, which is called Haywood's Hollywood Horses. It's a ranch dedicated to providing horses for film and television production. Their whole shtick is they are ostensibly the descendants, direct descendants, of the jockey depicted in The Horse in Motion, which is a very short film that is considered by many to be one of, if not the first, motion picture. So there's an incident involving O.J.'s dad, again, no spoilers, that has a rather tragic ending, which leads to O.J. trying to sort of carry on the business with the help of his sister, who's very ambitious and energetic, a young woman named Emerald, played by Kiki Palmer, who's phenomenal in this movie. But you know, times are tough. A lot of productions are sort of opting for CGI rather than actual trained animals, and so you know, these tough times lead to O.J. dealing with the neighbor of their ranch, a fellow by the name of Ricky Juke Park, played by Steven Yeun, who owns like a theme park called Jupiter's Claim next to the ranch. And so O.J. has sold some of his horses to Jupe to be used as part of the theme park. And this is where we do the aside where Jupe's claim to fame is he's a former child actor who was part of a legendary late 90s sitcom called Gordy's Home. It was wildly popular and then abruptly canceled when the chimp who starred as Gordy snapped on set and brutally attacked several of his fellow performers. This is a very key plot point that is revisited several times over the course of the film and is frankly both hilarious and chilling, which is basically what you expect from Jordan Peele. Everything shifts. O.J. sees something in the sky, something he can't explain. His sister sees an opportunity. She sets out to get photographic evidence of this phenomenon. She enlists the help of a guy named Angel, who works at the local electronics store. He's played by Brandon Perea. Set up some cameras, trying to get engaged, you know, trying to get a picture so they can put it out into the world. They're struggling to get it. They wind up reaching out to a cinematographer that they've worked with on commercial projects before, because he is like this sort of legendary like photographer of the natural world, and so they figure if anyone can get the shot, he can. And yeah, as weird as all that sounds, Rich, it gets like legitimately weirder, and I'm not going to tell you any more about it because, frankly, you should really see it for yourself.
Well, I can't wait to see it. I mean, there was a lot of buzz on social media last week because somebody had said that Jordan Peele is the greatest horror director of all time. He himself was quick to say, no, that's silly. But man, what a start the guy has had to his directing career.
Well, that's the thing, man. It's like, he's just three movies in. And, you know, and mad props to the guy for being like, you know, for basically being like, I will not stand for this John Carpenter erasure. Cause that's a dude who understands, the sort of, sandbox that he's playing in. But, look, like it's so wonderful to see a movie like this. It's basically a B movie that has like that's wrapped in these blockbuster trappings. Like it plays a lot like those sort of alien invasion thrillers of the 50s or the old monster movies from Toho. You know, the radioactive monsters rising from the ocean, but all those underlying sensibilities are elevated. Like, and you know, I mean, it's not like that's surprising. Like Peele's affinity for this kind of genre work is pretty well documented, but he's so good at using that sort of inspiration as a foundation to build this sort of thoughtful discourse, you know, and his movies are about a lot of things. Like to my mind, this one is really very much about like the sort of consumptive nature of mass entertainment and the ways in which it's a two-way street in that, you know, we consume but are also consumed, and he does a really wonderful job of sort of rendering that in an allegorical fashion, which is really just fantastic. I will say, again, it's only his third feature, but it's really fascinating to sort of watch the evolution happening. Like, he's always been a great writer, whether we're talking about, like, his time with Key and Peele, or, even if we want to go back to the Mad TV days, like, this is a guy who is very gifted writer. I will say this script probably isn't quite to the level of something like Get Out, because you know, Get Out's probably one of the best screenplays of the last 25 years, and so it's okay to not necessarily get there every time. But, like, he's getting better as a director. Like he was, you could tell, like, in those earlier works, he's almost working on instinct in a lot of ways. Like, he just, but he's really starting to get a better grasp of the tools available to him, and that craftsmanship is really playing out in just some really fantastic ways. Like, he has this wonderful sense of dynamism with his aesthetic, and he, you know, he unfailingly pulls phenomenal performances out of his actors. Mm. That, I think, is a signifier of a really good director. You know, it's an incredibly arresting film visually. Like, the cinematography is brilliant. He's got the guy who's been working with Christopher Nolan on a lot of his more recent projects, stuff like Interstellar and Tenet. It's got a wonderful score, got a very John Williams-esque kind of vibe. Like, you bring all these pieces together, and it's like, oh, this is a phenomenal-looking movie. And that's not even talking about the quality of the performances. Like, Daniel Kaluuya, always great. Like, he's one of the most talented actors of his generation. Peele has actually gone on record as calling Kaluuya his De Niro, which I think is a wonderful sort of analogy for the relationship that they're building as far as, like, filmmaker and actor. Kiki Palmer brings this wonderfully, like, buoyant sort of energy to the screen. Like, she's phenomenal. You know, and the dynamic between the two of them, that sort of brotherly, sisterly, sibling rivalry kind of vibe, is just spot on. Like, as the older brother of a younger sister, like, I recognized that relationship almost instantly, and it continued to ring familiar throughout the course of the movie. Like, their performances are just outstanding. Steven Yeun is fantastic. Like, he really he has maybe the one of the most difficult jobs in the film, sort of developing the complexity of this character, you know, this child actor who grew up to be a little bit of an entertainment sort of hustler. You know, and the rest of the supporting cast also really great. Like I said, there's not a bad turn here, which is kind of typical of you know, Jordan Peele's work. Look, this movie is a lot of things. And a lot of them are kind of contradictory when viewed on a surface level. Like, it's a spiritual throwback to those early movies, while also being very much of its moment. Like, it's an original story, which, you know, the value of an original story receiving this kind of big budget treatment and having this kind of box office reception in this day and age, the importance of that can't be overstressed. Like, it's like, we live in a world of IP and franchises. And so any opportunity we have to embrace a really good original story, like, this didn't come from anything. It's not going to become anything. Like, it is just itself. And we could stand to have a few more movies like that out there. You know, it's an entertaining film that is examining the sort of unhealthy relationship we often have with our entertainment. It's creepy, but charming. It's fearful, but funny. Like, it's this melange of vibes that probably shouldn't work as well as it does. But again, it's another excellent production from the mind of, I would argue, an absolute generational talent. Like, basically, like, in case you can't tell, I would say, go ahead and say yes to Nope.
Oh, there you go. Alan Adams with us on Downtown. Thank you, Al. Appreciate it as always. And we'll catch you again soon.
Yeah, we'll talk soon, man.
All right. Thanks a lot, Alan. Alan, talking movies on Pass the Popcorn.